Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. Today we have Glenn Stanton with us. Glenn is the Director of Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. He's a prolific author, very active in public affairs. And one of his books, a recent one, is Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. Glenn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be with you.
Well, I think that our listeners want to hear what is going on with Focus in the Family right now.
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff going on. In fact, part of the difficulty just in that question is really trying to capture everything. We are, you know, many people know us in the United States, but we're an international organization. And so we have offices all around the world that are doing different work in each of their nations relative to the needs of their nation and things like that. But we also, a bit of the answer to your question depends on sort of our shift of leadership. And it's shifted, you know, over the last 10 years from Dr. James Dobson, who founded Focus on the Family, and the switch to Jim Daly, who is our new president. Both of these men have very, very different stories. And so they have different emphases on where they have led the organization. It's interesting, just real quick, Dr. Dobson grew up, you know, in the 40s, 50s, in just an idyllic family. He was the only child of a mother and father married for life. His father was a pastor. His mother doted on him. He had a large extended family. So he really kind of looked at the 70s and 80s and 90s as, what were we losing? How is family slipping away?
Yeah.
Now, Daly, who came up through the ranks at Focus on the Family, he had the exact opposite story. He spent a lot of his time in foster care and never really had a secure, reliable home. So he doesn't look back with any kind of nostalgia. He's looking for a better future for families.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he's really focusing on is making sure, I mean, we're doing a lot of work in foster care, making sure that kind of the least of these families have the resources that they need to build strong families, those sorts of things.
Well, I think the sad fact, Glenn, is that more and more the experience of Mr. Daly is more common than Mr. Dobson.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, you know, the thing is Dr. Dobson, you know, rang the cultural alarm bell very effectively, saying bad things were happening, bad things were coming for the family. And you know what? They did.
They did.
And, I mean, it's interesting that it is more difficult to find a young person today who grew up in an intact, secure, healthy family than, you know, most of the young people today, sadly. They're like, you know what? I don't know what it's like to have a mom and a dad married, much less married for life.
Right.
So, and in a way, I mean, this is, we all think that the work that each of us does is very important. But when you think about what Focus on the Family is doing, focusing on the family and making sure that every human life comes into the world with the security of a loving married mother and father, and even with single parents, that single parents have the resources that they need to raise good kids so that everybody's thriving. That's our kind of brand promise, is thriving families in Christ, helping them grow in Christ, to come to know Jesus and Christianity, and to let that be the foundation of the families that they are raising.
What do you see in as we head into 2019? What are the pressing issues that you can address? I mean, you've talked about what single parentage, trying to help single parents, because we're not going back to, you know 95% of children being raised in two parent households. We're way beyond that, but we can try to make a dent in it, or at least try to give those single-parent households where we've got a conscientious mother most of the time, And helping her, because we know that no matter how conscientious she is, no matter how energetic she is, she can't do the work of two parents.
Right. And that's the interesting thing is people will say, well, gosh, I mean, you guys are talking about married parents. What about the single moms? I mean, won't you make them feel bad? And as I like to say, nobody sees single parent pride bumper stickers on cars. I mean, you know, typically these mothers know that they've got a bunch of rocks in their backpack.
And,
you know,
and I would think, Glenn, well, I think, Glenn, the first response to people who say that is, why don't you go ask the single mothers that question and ask them if they feel bad when someone comes along and says, we know you're tough and we want to help. Do you really think that they say no?
No, and that's a great, great point. A little bit of it shows, you know, the oversensitivity that we have in culture to, you know, point out the limp that anybody might have. But no, I mean, you're right. They so appreciate the kind of help and support and encouragement that we're giving these parents.
Well, do you see the old feminist line or the old progressive line? Then, well, families come in all different shapes and sizes, and we know that that actually factually is true, but that's not the preferential way to build families.
No, that's right. And I started my work here in 1993, and it has been fascinating to sort of be the staff sociologist because you do hear that all the time. And to make
you,
that.
Do you still hear that?
Oh, absolutely. But you hear it more in the same-sex marriage and same-sex parenting thing. And the phrase is, love makes a family. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, it's an important ingredient, but it's not the only ingredient. And so I like to, make the point with these people that you look at step families and cohabiting families. The research is abundantly clear, and it keeps coming out every year that these families are very problematic family forms, not just for the adults, but for the children, that step families and cohabiting families.
Now, but Glenn, to what extent will it harm a sociologist's career or an academic's career to start pursuing the evidence in that direction?
Well, when you apply it to the same-sex family thing, that's where you get into real problems. I mean, there are a number of scholars who, you know, have been studying these things, and they'll get swiped by some of their colleagues and peers a little bit here and there. But surprisingly, many of the folks studying cohabitation are not radical feminists, but they're feminist scholars. And they just know what the data says. But,
and they're good scientists.
And they're very good scientists, exactly. But when you bring this up against like the same-sex family, I mean, anybody who, I will say pot shots, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a pot shot. You can be critical in the slightest way, and largely your career is over,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But
let me get back to one point I was making there about that love makes a family. Now, if cohabitating families and step families are more problematic in terms of outcomes for children, then one would have to assume, well, cohabiting mothers and dads, step family moms and dads ought to just start loving their kids more. I mean, that's ridiculous. They love them just as much as anybody else. So, no, it's love is important. But configuration of the family itself matters significantly.
You know, when you say love is important, love matters, that's so unrealistic to so many of the things that happen to families. You need to have some institutional support, some bigger structure such as, you know, a marriage ceremony and that, you know, made into law. That partnership legally recognized, that helps you get through times when money is tough, when disease might hit the family, when things go wrong. And without that bigger familial, grounding, such as getting married.
Yeah.
It's hard enough for married couples to sustain marriage sometimes in the face of worldly difficulties. And to say just love will get you through, I don't think that the evidence of history warrants that.
Well, it's a terrible sentimentality, as you know. You know, I mean, it's like I always think about, you know, somebody will throw out a line on an Oprah show and the audience applauds erupts in applause. And that's exactly one of those lines, you know, love will see us through. Love is what makes a family. But no, it doesn't work that way. It's interesting that Eric Fromm, in his book, A Theory of Love, he says that if love could always see us through, the promises at the wedding would be unnecessary. I mean, that's fascinating because it's the promises at the wedding not only allow for, but they anticipate that love will not always be there. And that's exactly right.
Right. I think sentimentality is the right word for this, because sentimentality is simply a reassertion of very conventional wish fulfillment. But it doesn't handle the facts of things.
Yeah. And so, you know, along those lines, I like to say that there are three P's in society that are not sentimental about the family. That is pediatricians, police, and principals. They know within a society, the police people, the principals of a school, and the pediatricians. If you ask them, is love enough to make a family as good as any other family? They may be super liberal. They may not have any faith bone in their body, but they know that family configuration matters. You know what? That guy who's out gangbanging, his mama loves him.
Right.
Any other mom loves him, but the fact that there's not a dad in the house, that's what makes the difference.
Right, and frankly, I believe that it's not just two parents, it's opposite sex parents, because what children get from a mother is going to be quite different from what they get from a father, and they need both sides. You know, different things need to come at them, and I'm not sure that happens in same-sex parents. So Glenn, I mean, where do you come down on the same-sex family issue?
Well, you asked earlier what are the 2019 big issues for us? And this, the same-sex family, but not just the same-sex family, the larger issue of what do male and female matter for the family, that is increasingly going to be a big issue.
Male and female.
Male and female, that mothers and fathers as male and female, not just sentimental parents, but as male and female, gender distinct, sex distinct parents, and how they both contribute to raising healthy boys and healthy girls. And then, of course, we have the issue going right along with that has just hit all of us like a tsunami. And that's the gender issue, what it means to be male and female. I posted on Facebook yesterday, I saw an article from the British newspaper, The Independent, where they said kids in grade school are being taught that boys can have periods. And, you know, you think, okay, that's ridiculous. And, of course, what they're trying to say is, well, you can have a trans boy.
Right.
Yes, just because he has menses in a period doesn't mean that he's a woman. There's another document that I saw coming out where they want to call the vagina a front hole so that, you know, a quote unquote boy who has a vagina doesn't have to be shamed, you know, in saying that, oh, he's got a vagina. No, it's a front hole. I mean, it's the radical deconstruction, not just of humanity, but humanity is as God's icon and image bearers in the world as male and female.
So male and female. It's a brave new world, Glenn.
It's a mad new world is what it is.
Yes. Well, I actually find here is where the opposite sex parents give them sexual difference, and maintaining sexual difference, I think, is crucial to a healthy society, and the elimination of that difference produces some odd things. I just saw, was it in some You know, I got some Twitter feed on how there are now trans models at Victoria's Secret, or one of the
yes,
lingerie things. Okay.
They got in real big trouble because they said, you know what, we want women, real physical women, to model our stuff. I mean, and you know, they got in trouble for
well,
that.
Well, you would think, Glenn, that this could be a debate. But why is it that corporate America is so intimidated by one side in the debate?
You know what, Mark? And that point is, this could be a debate. I mean, it'd be one thing if it were a debate, if we could even debate it. But even raising the questions is to be bigoted, is to be, you know, a member of the KKK, if you will. And you asked the big question. And I was telling somebody this morning, I mean, I'm not a charismatic, so I don't see everything like this, but it really does, I think, have to come down to a spiritual conspiracy. The reason I say that is, one, I know a number of people on the other side of this issue, and they will say, we're not this smart, we're not this strategic, we're not this powerful to, you know, be able to force nearly every institution to bow at the feet of transgender ideology. The spiritual conspiracy here is Satan, and certainly not saying that everybody who's involved in this is satanic, but Satan knows what he's doing when he attacks and says, this male and female thing, pay no attention to that. It's not what you think it is. He knows what it is, and that is God revealing himself, as Genesis 1 teaches us clearly, God revealing himself in the physical world. As Pope John Paul said so famously in Theology of the Body, he says, it is the body and only the body that can reveal in the world the living, invisible God. And he does it in this body of male and female, in this nature of male and female. So when we see these things being attacked today, I mean, we've got to be able to do the spiritual math here and see what is behind this and understand this. It's not just the latest skirmish in the culture war. It is a full frontal attack on the very nature of who God is in the world.
I'm afraid that most people, that they don't want to see it as a war of that kind. I mean, wars are unpleasant. And to talk about Satan at work in the world, that doesn't make people feel good. How does focus on the family impart the message of God's word when it comes across to so many people as too adversarial? You're igniting just more culture wars, and those we had those 20, 30 years ago, and they weren't, they gave everyone a bad feeling.
A bad taste in their mouth. Well, no, I mean, that is the big question. And when you talk like that, people whirl their eyes and say, okay, you don't look anything like Dana Carvey, the church lady, but you sure do sound a lot like him. And it does. It sounds ridiculous. We need to know that we speak in different ways to different audiences. I mean, I will say things like this very clearly to people within the church. Outside the church, we need to speak from the authority of just natural law, and pointing out that, no, we can't ignore that male and female really do exist, that there is a female nature, that there is a male nature, and that the contribution of male and female does not stop at, you know, if you will, to be frank, ejaculation, you know? Yeah. No, just as it takes a male and a female to create a little boy or a little girl, it takes the, you know, 18 years plus contribution of that mother and father. And we're going to find out later that we're going to have a whole generation of kids raised in same-sex homes who will say, you know what, I love my two dads, I love my two moms, but I was cheated out of a father and a mother, and we're already starting to hear from these people already. But my goodness, as more and more of these kids are raised in these kinds of homes, and only because there are adults who want these kind of homes, kids are not calling out for them. The adults are shaping them because they, you know, because they want those kind of homes.
Now,
but the kids, when they come of age, they're going to say, you know what, why wasn't I given access to my mother or my father?
When you are talking to secular audiences, do you find that science, the science on the family, family outcomes that we have, is one of your best friends?
You know what? In this sense, when I am speaking to a secular audience, you can make no ground whatsoever because on the science issue, they will, and they do it all the time to me, they'll say, well, Mr. Stanton, you can say anything you like, but the American Academy of Pediatrics, the AMA, the APA, the APP, and, you know, they just throw out all these organizations. Yeah. All these organizations have said conclusively that there are no problems with same-sex homes. And,
didn't they say the same thing about children of divorce for a long time?
Exactly. That is exactly right. That all the authorities back then, before there was any research, said, oh my goodness, these kids are going to do just fantastic. If parents can leave bad marriages and go into happier marriages, become happier parents, and kids do better with happy parents. And it's interesting on this, Mark, that, I mean, you know this, the best research coming out from the secular scholars could not overstate the damage of what anybody anticipated would be the fallout from the divorce culture. And we're seeing exactly the same thing on this. We don't have a lot of definitive research, but it's gay politics, and that sounds so conspiracy-like, but it's gay politics within each of these professional organizations that has been pushing this. And the rest of the membership is just scared. They will not stand up to these people. Yeah. They won't resist these people, and they just get bulldozed.
You remember, you know, the big Murphy Brown episode, the conflict with Dan Quayle over family values.
Yeah.
And Murphy Brown standing up on her set and on camera, bringing everyone in and saying, Mr. Quayle, families come in all different shapes and sizes, and you need to realize that. And everyone bought it. Everyone accepted, at least in the entertainment world, in the mainstream media world, in the academic world, in the art world, in the Hollywood world. But some good social scientists looked at the numbers and said, nope, you know, you all thought Dan Quayle was backward and stupid, but he was really right. That the best family is the traditional family. And I'm saying, when you look at liberals, you know, the moderate liberals, not hard leftists, progressives, but instead people who tend to vote Democratic, but they lead pretty bourgeois lives and they subscribe to pretty much Protestant work ethic style norms. Do they know that the traditional family is best? Because they certainly live that way.
You know what, and that's the point is, and our friend Brett Wilcox, I remember one line, the ending line of a piece that he wrote in the Wall Street Journal about this very thing. He said, for the progressive liberals, he goes, don't do what they say, do what they do.
Right.
Meaning, you know, these people are not raising kids without being married. The overwhelming majority of them are married. They're married before they have their children. You know, they're committed to one another, and it's not because they're so conservatively pro-family. It's because they realize that's just a much nicer, better place to be.
Right.
So, yeah, ideologically, they may believe one thing, but when you look at what they actually do, they really are quite pro-family.
You know, we had lunch today with a young man who graduated from Stanford last year. And he was describing one of the things that they did in the dorms where the orientation people had them do this kind of privilege walk game where they line everyone up and have them face the front and start asking questions. and a certain answer will move you forward a few steps, other answers will make you stay in place. And the goal was to show that you know, again, we have a very diverse group and there are certain privileges that the people here need to recognize. And one of the questions was, how many of you come from divorced homes? And the guy said, out of 50 or 60 or 100 people, hardly anybody took a step forward. And you could almost see the disappointment in the orientation counselors' faces, because they wanted to show, we have divorced kids here and they do just as well, but they have different experiences. And the fact is, kids who grow up in divorced or otherwise dysfunctional homes, they don't end up at Stanford. They don't end up at Princeton.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's fascinating. And I mean, we see very clearly, and there's very many liberal scholars telling us this, that the class divide now, it used to be over employment, you know, back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Then through 50s and up to, you know, the late 70s, it was education, that if you had educated parents, you know, you were likely to do well. Now, the demographers and economics professors are telling us that it's marital rate of parents. Hmm. If you have married parents, you're nearly guaranteed never to be poor. If you grow up in a single parent family, you're, you know, nearly guaranteed to live some part of your life in poverty. Hmm. And that little story right there, I mean, demonstrates that very clearly.
So as we wrap up, Glenn, what are some big events with Focus on the Family in the coming months?
Well, a big thing that we do is Wait No More events. And I'm not quite sure what we've got coming up in the coming months, but you can go to our website, focusonthefamily.com. And Wait No More is where we're going into cities and we're getting churches to come together and members from churches to say, within this state, on the government rolls, you have, you know, 900 kids in foster care. How, you know, like if every church in this state adopted like half a kid, you know, we could clear those roles easily. Let's try to do that. Mm-hmm. And so calling out for the church to let's empty the roles of kids in foster care all throughout the states. And so we're doing those. Mm-hmm. We do marriage conferences. We have lots and lots of parenting resources, and all of that stuff can be found at our website. And we're just happy to be here and help anybody who needs any kind of help with family.
Very good, Glenn. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, sure, Mark. Thank you.
All right.